My name is Lori Arnoldi.
Enrolled in the history of Wyoming class taught by David Kafka. This interview being made on April 29th, 1974 is of Nay Vesco, and I'm going to talk to him about his early life as a resident of Wyoming.
Nay, what is your date of birth?
My date of birth is born March 7th, 1916 in Superior, what was known at the time as the Sea Hill.
And that's Superior, Wyoming, as we know it, just east of Rock Springs here, about 25 miles?
Right.
And also, what was your father and mother's name?
Well, my father's name was Rudolph and my mother's name was Marie.
And what is your, and do you have any sisters and brothers?
I have a sister, her name is Mrs. A.T. Boone, which presently is residing at Hudson, Wyoming. And I have a sister, her name is Mrs. Link Trotter. She is presently at Houston, Texas. And I have a brother, his name is Bruno Vesco, and he is right now residing at Lawrence, Kansas.
Nay, what I would like to do in this interview is see if you can remember some of your earliest childhood memories and relate to us what your livelihood was after you were a young man and how it ended up here in Sweetwater County.
Well, my earliest recollection really is well, I'd say about 5 years old when I was living out at the ranch and talking about it with my two uncles, and Louis Vesco and Anton DeBertoli, and they were both originally immigrants from Tyrol, Italy, and they come over here, and I think Uncle Louis came over in 1913, and I believe Uncle Tony came over here about 1911 or 1912. And they worked in the coal mines in Superior until 1914, which at the time they were in Superior, they were in the milk cow business. You know, it's mining coal and had these they had 18 head of milk cattle. So, being ranchers or farmers over in the old country, they figured that their best bet would be to buy themselves a ranch and start raising cattle. So.
Now, going back to these two men and their past experience in the old, what we call the old country over in Tyrol, Austria. Did they live in the Alp Mountains over there?
Yeah, it was right on the, I believe it was right on the, presumably close to the Swiss border. At the time it was Tyrol, Austria, which now is known as Italy. But I believe there's only very few miles from the Swiss border.
They had experience over there as young boys in raising of livestock, and this is how they...
Right, they were both cattle herders when they were young boys over in Italy, and as you would say, in Austria at the time.
Anyway, Nay, you were born in Superior, and was your father a miner in Superior?
My dad mined in Superior. We stayed in Superior until about 1921, when he moved to Rock Springs. And at Rock Springs, he worked at the old number 8 coal mine. And we stayed there till 1927. And after 1927, he moved to Lander. And he took up ranching and farming in Lander. Or Hudson. And he was a rancher and a farmer in Hudson until 1939 of October, the day when he died.
And you were at what age at the time he passed away?
At the time he passed away, I was 21 years old.
But you started coming back down into Sweetwater County, into the Rock Springs Superior area as a young boy?
Well, when I was 5 years old, I left Rock Springs and went out to stay with my uncle out on the ranch at Salt Wells, and I stayed out there till I was about 12 years old. And I left there, went up to Hudson with my folks, But I lived out there as a young boy. I went to school out at Salt Wells. They had a school out there, and consequently, every one of the students out there at Salt Wells were all Italians, and our school teacher was American. She couldn't understand a word we were saying. It was I and the family's name of Parados, and family of name of Zanetti's, which is still presiding right here in Los Angeles at the present time.
Could you describe what type of a building you went to school at?
Well, our schoolhouse was really an old railroad tie building made out of railroad ties. It was just a one-room place, and there was a teacher's home and the schoolroom all combined all together. The seats were all loose from the floor, and whenever school was on, we just pushed the seats over the corner, and the school teacher had her living quarters in the same room.
And how was this building heated?
It was an old pot-bellied stove, coal stove, wood stove.
Did you attend a school for a nine-month period?
Yeah, we went for 9 months just like we do in Bidentown. In the latter part of the, I'd say we went to this school here for about 4 or 5 years, and then he moved the school over to Salt Wells Railroad Station. We went to school over there, and we used to go there with a horse and buggy.
How many students were in this building?
Well, I'll say, let's see, it was myself and 1, 2, 3, 4 Zanetti's and 3 of the Parados.
Okay, Nate, that kind of sums up your very early childhood. And as the years went by, what was your primary occupation?
Well, from the time I was 5 years old till I was about 22 years old, all I ever done was ranch work. I stayed till I was a pretty fair hand. I stayed out at Salt Wells and was out there working the winter time and the summer time to go up north, work up in Mount Thermopolis and Shoshone and Lone Pine, that country up in that northern part of the state. Bunch of cattle working on ranches.
Now, you worked for Tony DiBortoli. As a cowpuncher, would you say?
That's right, yeah. Well, the early development of the ranch here, we actually, when they first moved out on the ranch, they started out with 18 head of milk cattle, which is, Holsteins and Guernseys and Heinz 57 varieties, as you would put it. And they bought, I believe, the ranch itself had, I imagine, would say about another 20 head of cattle, about 8 or 10 head of horses, which you started with. And actually, the ranch itself, the only hay they ever put up was, just a little patch and a little patch here and a little patch there. And the way we developed the ranch was every winter, in early spring, you'd go out and cut off a patch of sagebrush and greasewood and stuff like that, and level it out and develop it and put seed in there. And every year we try to increase the size of a meadow all the time. In the early years, for water, what they used to do was what they had the Salt Wells Creek out there, and then spring you had to go out there and sandbag it so it would flood all this area. See, that's the only water they had, except for rain.
There's actually two creeks that join out there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a little Bitter Creek, a little in the Salt Wells and in the Bitter Creek.
Now, you mentioned that you tapped into the Salt Wells Creek for irrigation water. Did they also try that with the Bitter Creek?
Yes, in later years they went up just below what they called, used to be at their Junction Railroad Station. And we built a dam across the Bitter Creek and just more or less followed the course of the water to build an irrigation ditch to get the water down to the ranch.
Now, in this desert country, water is scarce. What did they do for the drinking water?
Well, for drinking water, the way we worked it out there, we'd have built us an underground cistern. Well, I'd say capacity of about, is about 2,000 gallons. And we plastered and concreted the sidewalls on it. Then whenever the snow banks got high enough, we'd put this water in the tank and build a fire underneath it and run the water into the cistern that we used for drinking and cooking water.
By melted snow.
Because there's no water, there's no wells out there at all. The water's all alkaline.
Did you think at this time that the living conditions were tough, as they no doubt were?
Well, it was more or less a primitive way of living. The only thing, the only way we had to get into Rock Springs for supplies was to either go up to the railroad station and stop a passenger train, or with a spring wagon and a team of horses and come into Rock Springs one day and go back home the next.
Did you ever hear of much complaint from the people that were out there making a living in this method?
No, it's just
an accepted.
Just took it day by day, and just everybody seemed to be, well, more or less satisfied with the way they was making a living.
A lot more satisfied than people are nowadays,
right,
would you say?
Right, absolutely.
Okay, after a long day's work, Nay, what were some of the things you might do in the evening?
Well, what we used to do is, we had our neighbors within all about a mile, and one of them was a mile away, and the other was about a mile and a half. We'd take turns maybe a couple nights a week, say on Saturday night, seven of them listen to the radio, and some of them had guitars, and sit there and play cards, and drink coffee, and just talk over the events of the week.
It's probably just one time a week you do this, though.
Well, depending on the weather, you know.
And the time of year.
The time of year. In the summertime, we generally didn't have time to sit around and shoot the boat. You know,
how would you travel this mile or mile and a half?
Oh, sometimes horseback, other times if this weather wasn't too bad, just walking or just hooking it.
No, you didn't have any motor vehicles at all?
No, not at the time. I think the first motor vehicle we had, I think we bought it in about 1931 Dodge pickup, I believe it was. 32, somewhere in there.
But anyway, you enjoyed one another's company.
Oh, yeah, it was real nice to get together because, you know, there's, actually, that was the only pastime a person had. We never had no radios, no mail, never got any mail, never got any newspapers, anything else. The only thing we do is get together and talk all the old times.
With these different people converse in their native tongue, or would they speak English, or how would they talk to one another?
No, always in Italian. Because actually there was the only people out there at that time were Italians. And none of us really knew how to talk English real well. In fact, I couldn't even say good morning when I first started school, actually, in English, because when I was real young, as we said, 5 years old, I moved out there and all we ever talked was Italian.
But these people were very friendly toward one another.
Oh, yes, we always got along real well. Help one another in hard times, and haying time and binding time and stuff like that. We always pitched in, everybody done their share.
What were some of the methods of feeding their stock?
Well, what we done is every year about the latter part of August, we put up wild hay, which is mostly ryegrass and a little bit of timothy and foxtail and whatever we could cut out on these flats. We put it in stacks, and we cut it with an old team horse and an old time mow machine. Rake, and then we'd use a hay rack to haul the hay and put it in the stacks of about 10, 12, 15 tons and use that hay for the wintertime. We never feed cattle enough to keep them fat. The only thing we did is just feed them just enough to keep them alive. We didn't have that much hay. And the only horses we ever kept in, the only three horses we kept in at the ranch in the wintertime was one saddle horse and a team of horses. And the rest of the horses, we just turned them loose on the outside and let them rough it for themselves. And the only cattle we brought in was cows, hay with calf, and young stock, you know, such as yearlings and stuff we couldn't make it. The rest of the cattle would wheel up around Old Black Butte and Pointer Rocks and stuff like that in the breaks back there in the Cedars. They do pretty good, unless the snow got to be, which wasn't really too often. But in the spring of the year, as soon as the grass got green, we tried to turn them loose, let them go back out on the open range.
Did this create a pretty hardy breed of cattle then?
Well, the first few years we was down there, we really didn't have too good a brand of stock, you know. It was mostly milk cows and interbred and stuff like that. But as the years went by, we bunkers had to go down to the Wyoming Hereford Ranch and buy some of the cheaper bulls they had down there. Say about, at the time, they'd run them about $200, or say from $150 to $250 a head, which was a heck of an enormous price at the time. But in the period of years, passing of years, they kept improving the stock, always getting rid of the worst ones and keeping the best. In the latter years, they really had some wonderful stock.
In other words, he gradually had his goal of getting the best breed bulls he could buy.
Right. We bought from Wyoming Hereford Ranch, and then later on went down to Nebraska and bought a few bulls. And every year we tried to improve our stock as much as we could, because the better stock you had, actually, the better they would winter. And the more money you could get from on the market.
Well, after the haying time was over and the hay was put up in these stacks for the following winter, what was the next type of work you got ready to do?
Well, right after haying, we'd go out where we'd call on, we'd go out on the roundup. We'd start our roundup for just about the latter part of, well, I won't say directly after haying, because haying was always in August and then in the first part of September. But in the fall, let's say starting about the 1st of October, we'd go out and start rounding the cattle up and then start working them towards ranch. We'd get all our cows and calves in, and we had what we called a weaning pen. And we'd get all the cattle we figured we was going to ship, and all the cows and calves, and we'd run them all down to, we had a holding pen just above, between Bitter Creek and Point of Rocks, where we had the base camp. And then we'd set, we had a sheep wagon we'd set up around somewhere around Bitter Creek. And we'd get all our cattle together and hold them out at Bitter Creek in the stockyards. So we got a bunch of them, and we'd run them down to a place called Hallville. We'd put them in a holding pasture. And from there, we'd take them out to home ranch, and then we'd wean the calves, take the calves, separate them away from their mothers. And we'd put all the stock in this one pasture. And then along about the first part of November, we'd take and cut out all the beef and all the cattle we wanted to ship, and we'd run them up to, sometimes we'd bring them into Rock Springs to the stockyards, and other times we'd take them up to Point Rocks and ship them from there. Sometimes we'd ship to Denver, and sometimes we'd ship to Omaha, just depending.
There was a stockyard at Point of Rocks in those days?
Yeah, pretty good sized stockyard. We'd ship either Denver or Omaha, depending on the price of the market, or whatever then, place had the best market.
Then from there they went out by Union Pacific Rail?
Right, by cattle carts.
Could you describe what a typical day was on the roundup, emphasizing on weather?
Well, the weather was no problem in them days, regardless of, in other words, the weather didn't make a darn bit of difference. It was good or bad, you went out every day. And your morning started about an hour before sunup. One guy'd get up and cook breakfast, and me being the youngest one all the time, I always do the job of going jingling the horses. And jingling the horses, we meant by going out and riding up the stock we were going to ride that day. We always generally had about 15 or 20 saddle horses. We tried to alternate horses every day. And I'd bring the horses in, then the other, whoever had the horses, they'd go and rope them and turn the rest of them loose and feed them, give them a little bit of oats. And then by that time, breakfast would be ready. And that'd be the start of the day. And then we'd have designated areas each one would go to, certain areas we'd ride, say maybe about a 10-mile circle. And everything we found in that 10 miles, we'd bring it out to the holding place. And what we wanted to take the whole ranch, we'd keep them, rest them, we'd just turn them back outside the gate and let them take off.
Just for the record, Nay, this time you're talking about is about what period?
Well, this period would run, I can remember, I would say from, 1925 to 19, I believe the ranch was sold in 19, I'd say somewhere around about 1950. It was the same, we used, always used the same process to do things. And one system that they had in them days there was, if a man's cattle strayed from their own home range to somebody else's range, see, if it was a beef cow, what they would do, they would ship it with their own cattle. See, they would ship to Omaha, wherever it was, branded cattle. And when that cow went to the market, whoever the consignee was, whoever bought the cattle, they would just take this money this cow bought and they would send it to the owner. Was it not Ashley? No.
Powell?
Powell. William Powell. There's some markings up there. He's where they scratch the name of these rocks and decide to pull them off. It's real interesting.
Is them markings in good shape yet?
Real good shape.
There's probably some that not too many people know about.
No, I don't think there's too many people know that because it hasn't been defaced or anything. Nobody's ever messed around with it. In fact, I think it would be a good idea if the Historical Society went out and put a pension on that. What do you do? Two old markings. I would say they're right close to 80 years old. That card was up there.
Getting back to your own experiences out there, Nate, what was some of the type of equipment that you used in the performance of your work out there?
Well, just like I say, these two uncles I worked for, they was very, very conservative. They did not believe in modern equipment. In fact, we never had a haystacker until obviously the latter part of 1940. All our hay and everything were done with just pitchfork and a hay rack. That's all we used, and a mowing machine, and just a plow, a foot plow, not even a riding plow we didn't have. And I believe the first pickup we had was a Dodge pickup, made about that in the latter part of the 29s or 30s, somewhere there.
Now, being a cow puncher or cowboy by trade, did you have to kind of coax yourself to take to this fence fixing and haying time, although you knew that the hay was valuable in the total concept of ranching? But what was your attitude about fixing a fence or
irrigation? Well, actually, just like you've seen on all these Western movies, the worst job on a ranch was fixing fence for anybody. Nobody liked to fix fence. But you just took it as part of your day's work. Haying wasn't really too bad. It was a lot of hard work, but you knew that you had to have that hay to survive, to make any, to make a go, but you had to have that hay for the winter.
But did these two uncles of yours, did they leave a lot of the riding up to you?
Well, mostly in the summertime, yes. But we went as a rule, we all went together.
What was the purpose?
Because actually, at the ranch, there wasn't too much work to do at the ranch in the summertime.
What was the purpose of you to go on horseback and ride into the country? What were some of the reasons you did this?
Well, in the first place, the reason why you have to ride when you're on the cattle ranch is that you got to see that your stock don't stray too far. And you got to be sure that you're in good shape. And once in a while, we'd take a move from one place to another where we figured there's a little more pasture for them, such as a cow has a funny way of doing it. Unless you pot them away from a certain place, they won't move too much, you know, unless it's probably the winter time of blizzard. But,
would you make some type of a verbal report or written report on what you observed during a ride into the area where these cattle were, into the cedars around Black Butte and so forth?
Well,
your uncle?
Well, for one thing, the country's changed a lot. We had more grass at that time. There was more water. And it didn't seem like you had to, you really had the tough times in the winters that they do now. Now, I don't believe a cow could actually make it on the range in the winter by itself, unless it's a real mild winter. But I don't know whether it's water, contents of water in the ground, or the elements of the weather, what it is, but we don't have the grass. Years ago, you could ride out here to Wells from Mock Springs, anywhere along the Bennett Creek or the Salt Wells Creek, and heck, you could get no mowers and sagebrush. You couldn't even see a man inside of us. So now there's no mowers, there's hardly any sagebrush left, any. All kinds of wild game, and you could see anything out there, all of that.
When you got back, though, you would relate to Mr. DeBortoli, Tony DeBortoli, and Louis Vesco of what took place during your ride.
Oh, yeah,
we had
certain things we looked for, you know, such as sick cattle and poor cattle and conditions of the rains and the water and so forth and so on. And, you know, where we've seen... Well, it's funny because after a person works with a certain bunch of cattle for so many years, you have... Like I say, cattle have a certain area that they run in. You kind of have kind of...
A domain?
A certain cattle that you can spot, you know, such as probably a short-tailed cow or one with one horn or one with long horns or a broccoli-faced cow or particularly marked, certain marked cow, branded or something. She'll generally range in just in a certain area. See, and you can tell by going where what cattle you've seen and where they were at and so forth and so on. See? And if your cattle are willing to do too good, you try to move them someplace else where they had a little bit more feed or more water to drink. Wouldn't have to travel so far to water and so on.
When you leave the ranch for a couple of days, Nay, what would you take to eat? Or did you eat good while you were gone from there?
Well, not too really too well. We used mostly canned stuff. Came shoot some rabbits and probably sage chicken or two, a little bit of dried beef, rice, stuff like that.
You didn't think too much about satisfying your appetite or more?
No, we actually missed more meals than we cooked. Every few I'm ready to cook. But we always managed to get by pretty good shape. Huh? As I say, we always had these lion camps that were always available, these cabins.
We didn't talk anything about what your wages were in those days. Would you care to relate what your monthly pay was, how they did that?
Well, being as I worked for two uncles, my pay really wasn't too much. They didn't pay much. I was getting about $15 a month, I'll ask you, because I was still young and they was kind of bringing me up, you know. But in later years, when I started working up in North Country, wages were for top hand was $45 a month, if he's a pretty good hand.
That was 45 silver dollars?
Right. That was pretty big money then. That's about 1930, 31, 32.
Could you save any of it?
Well, he could, but we didn't. Saturday night in town. Well, he could save a little money. I didn't say he couldn't, but very seldom did.
What would you buy with some of this money?
Well, he had to buy, when he worked on a ranch, all he gave you was $40 a month in pound, as they call it, and once in a while, if you smoked, he would furnish tobacco. But you had to buy your own clothes, your own saddle, and all your stuff like that, your own bedroll, and all your personal stuff was your own expense.
Would you buy a good quality boots?
Well, I always did. I don't know about anybody else. I always bought what we paid at the time was a fairly good boot. It was a Blucher, made in Texas, and a Justin boot.
What would a pair of those cost in them days?
Well, sometimes if you paid, I'd say $30 for a pair of boots, you got a pretty good pair of boots. $30. That's a month's wages for a pair of boots. And all our clothes, our shorts, and winter clothes is all made by Peddleton. All the best blankets, you get all your best blankets and shorts. And pants and underwear and stuff like that was all Pendleton. And naturally, old standby Levi's. And everybody had a pair of shafts, you know, in the wintertime.
How about a coat? Did you have a good old coat?
Well, yeah, we got also Pendleton coats. We had them all. And then when the weather got real bad, they used sheepskin coat. The old sheepskin. Canvas bags with sheepskin.
Did you wear a neckerchief?
Well, just in the wintertime, keeping this one with me.
Do you remember in them days, Nate, did people catch cold or did they get sick?
Well, in the first place, you couldn't afford to get sick when you was out on the ranch like that.
A pretty hardy breed of people.
Well, they were. It's very true. It was very, very, very seldom that you ever got really down and out. Once in a while, you catch a cold or got the flu or something like that, but it was rare. I mean,
you suppose that this absence of sickness was because of their mental attitude? They had such good...
Well, mental attitude, environment, and everything that you ate was good. You never ate nothing none of this...
And a lot of good hard work. And
right. Up in the morning, out in the fresh air, and work outside all day, and then come back in at night and...
Sleep good.
He slept real good. There's no... But things have really changed in the last 30 years. Since I was a boy, and what the boys are going through today is a lot of difference.
Is this ranch still in existence, and is it being operated at this present date?
No. That ranch was sold in the latter part of the 50s. And this ranch right now is going back to its original state. It's not but the sagebrush and the Golden Wilds. The ranch actually, I think, now is property of the Rock Springs Grazing Association.
But is there any evidence out there at all of at one time any buildings or corrals being there?
Well, there's a few old sheds and part of the fence, and you can still see where the irrigation ditch was and part of the meadow, and the rest of it's all just going back to nature.
I want to thank you, Nate, for making this interview on this section of Sweetwater County, and I'm sure that people in the future will find this interview very interesting. Thank you.